I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Dee.
And you're listening to Mamas with Attitude, otherwise known as MWA.
Mama.
Interesting, cool South African relevant content.
Yeah.
On where we were at. Mm-hmm.
You know, motherhood just comes to take on its different shapes and forms.
Mama is a bunt. If mama's a bunt.
Jesus.
Weird. Yeah.
You're in another zone, but you're totally out of the twilight.
Mama.
Attitude. Hi, and welcome back to Mamas with Attitude. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Dee.
This is our fifth episode. Yes. We are joined today by Uka Collins, who runs a playgroup in Melville called Uka's Playgroup. My son, Tawi, attends Uka's Playgroup, and it was a long and arduous process to find a space that I was happy with, that he was happy with. As you all know, Kath and I have been whining about our three teenagers. We felt it really pertinent to actually have a conversation with somebody who can speak teenager, because clearly we can't. And so, yeah, so today we're very, very happy to have you on, Uka. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For the listeners, Kath said it's important to just paint the picture and say that we are seated on preschooler chairs at their preschooler little tables. And actually, Uka, could we have some of that Play-Doh they get in the
some building blocks. But also, we have our shampers in front of us.
Yes,
so
we do.
We're straddling both. The three
Uka does
space.
It for the parents. Listening, don't worry.
That is
your responsible caregiver.
Whereas we're not.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So yes, that is the context. Yeah. Thank you so much, Uka, for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Cool. So, Uka, perhaps you just want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your space and how you kind of arrived here. This is such a beautiful and warm space. I know you guys won't all get a chance to see it. It's a small playgroup of about, is it 10 kids?
10 to 12, depending how hectic the year is. I opened the playgroup in 2003.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's been a while. I used to be the young teacher, younger than all the parents. Now I'm older.
I
used to be really judgmental. Parents would come in the morning really tired and go, oh, I didn't get any sleep because the baby's on me and the little one is in the bed. And I'm thinking, so why is your child in your bed? Like, that's seriously, you did that to yourself. Like, how does that happen? Yeah. Judgmental anymore.
That's the lesson 101, right, of becoming a parent, is that like, and you see it repeatedly on all these Instagram accounts and all these Facebook accounts of like, I used to be the one judging screen time and now here I am like handing the iPad over at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know.
Yeah.
You just don't know until you're there.
And it's just that's certainly been my biggest lesson, becoming a parent. I now never judge.
Yeah.
Ever.
No, totally.
Every single time I do, it comes back to me.
Yeah.
But I do find you kind of better than most. It's so funny that you're the teacher, because so Uka's said to me more than once, she says she's kind of in complete disbelief usually about someone else. She'll go, I love learning new things. I love it when people tell me the thing, you know, so that I can learn the thing. And I mean, it must also be in your personality to be that way, because I think that for lots of parents, you do kind of realize you can't judge as much because you don't know as much. But I still think that for lots of parents, they do actually hold on quite tightly to what they do know to pass that on to their kids. And so, like, I don't know, I do find a kind of openness from having gotten to know you. You're very open to like opinion, but also if someone like really does have something that they know a lot about, you're quite open to that, you know what I mean? And I think that working with small kids, I suppose you have to be. You know, I suppose there has to be a lot of room for imagination and for creating the drama every day for them, for and with them. So
also, I mean, I know this sounds so cliche, but they teach you so much more than what you can ever teach them. And I think in their lives, the trick.
You've
got to be able to be flexible and just adjust accordingly.
Amo, say hello.
Hello. Hello, Amo.
What do you think about your brother?
I will not talk into the phone.
Yeah, he's not in the mood.
Okay, so why don't you tell us a bit, so we know you work with, you take in from what, about one? A little bit over
no,
one.
No, so I also run a baby group.
Oh, yes.
So normally, that starts at 6 months.
Okay.
So parent or nanny or grandma or whoever comes with baby, and it's an hour and a half class,
mm-hmm.
and I basically teach them how to stimulate their child and what it's really about, that it's not about expensive toys, but it's about the input and the language you give them, and we sing hello, and we do songs and action songs, and then we also do conceptual, fine motor, So for instance, we use all recyclable material, and the idea is that if your child, which often your child doesn't want to do it in the moment, you can take the idea home and do it at home.
Mm.
And there's no pressure, it's about having fun and just creating an environment where parents or caregivers can chat. And yes. You know, when especially
it's a lonely
first-time mom or first-time dad, you know, you don't really know what's going on. It's so nice to hear someone else in the same position, even if you just want to sit outside and drink tea and eat. And so the idea behind that is you're in a safe space with your safe person, and then when they get to about 16, 17 months, they switch over to the intermediate group at play group. Then you come to play group with your safe person. It's a new room. And then the baby room, which is somewhere else, we go there for music, the play group children normally anyway. So then we all go there for music, which is, by the way, what we do on a Thursday. And then they see all the play group children sitting on their own little pillars in a circle, but they still sit with their
same person.
And they get used to the playgroup kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do the songs in there and the hello song, which they all know. And then we come back to playgroup. We rewash, so that's new. And have snack with them. Play outside in a different area from, because the babies have a separate play area. And they play with the playgroup children. And then slowly, slowly, they get used to me, to the routine here. So that, because I don't believe in trauma, so I don't think there needs to be any kind of drop off
and
scream and go. And because, you know, they don't actually know that you're coming back. I mean, it's terrible to say. But they don't until you keep repeating it.
Mm.
But that way there's no trauma.
One of the things that I find really interesting, I kind of landed in the spot of being a playgroup parent because of Cape Town, and I just felt like, I suppose being a first-time parent, you're just so excited about everything to come that you're kind of like, yay, and now it's time to start looking out for things to do every day. I didn't want to send him to a kind of big facility, and so we found a little playgroup in Cape Town, and it was also very, very sweet, very small. I think there were like four other kids and it's very close to home, and it really worked. And then when we moved here, lots of friends said, oh, it'll be totally easy for Tao. You can go to Mimosa. So that's my first encounter with Mimosa. And I went to see it and I was kind of about to sign him up, and I went, oh, this feels really big. And I mean, on the one hand, of course, I was being quite precious about it, which I'm also learning now, just different parents, different approaches, because Akani went to his nursery school from earlier.
Yeah.
I found Uka's playgroup, but it's not easy to find a playgroup,
yeah,
I guess, is the one thing.
It.
Because I'm psycho, and the one thing I can do really well is do research and find things. So if you give me a task, I will find it. I'm very curious about, like, I guess for people who don't know, can you maybe explain what is the difference between a playgroup and a nursery school, right? And would you, I mean, obviously you have one, so I'm sure you would advocate for the one versus just straight into a nursery school. But I mean, there are lots of kids who, of course, do go the nursery school route, and they're totally fine and they're happy and they thrive. Yeah. I guess maybe just some tips for, because we, Kath and I both know lots of moms who are in that phase where they are now trying to figure out what do they do with their kids. And as you know, I'm in the phase because Uka takes them up to about 3 or just over. So in the year
that they turn three. Yeah. That's the end of that year they leave.
Yes.
Because normally nursery schools used to start in the year that they turn 4. So you would enter preschool the year they turn 4. And then you go to grade R.
But since when is grade R a thing? Grade R certainly wasn't a thing when you were at school.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I can't remember the exact year, but basically it happened because children who hadn't been in preschool, who were entering grade 1, still had to get used to the medium. So it took longer then to learn letters and read and all of that.
Just to get everyone on the same page.
Exactly. Mm. So then they realized, okay, to even it, they're going to have to make, they called it grade R or noughts, and make it compulsory. So it's not so hard for everyone to
I wonder what the outcome is of that though, because I think you probably still face the same issues, the same challenges. And I know that our basic education system is quite broken, and obviously that's again a generalization. It's not all schools are broken, but I do wonder if the it's had the desired effect or the desired outcome. And I find that with education it's been interesting, and perhaps similarly with health, you have all these kind of consultants who came in with a new dispensation and were very theoretical in what they thought would work.
Absolutely.
And practically looking at the disparity around inequalities in South Africa, geographical issues, whatever that may be, it doesn't necessarily always work. It's a blanket approach that may not always work. So I do wonder if Grade R does level the playing fields in the ways in which we imagined.
Well, I feel like there are a lot of, Dee and I actually spoke about it earlier today. I feel like there are a lot of disadvantages, because what then happened was that all of a sudden Grade R became part of school, and some children were already in uniforms at that age, and the expectations were higher. There wasn't enough play, or there isn't enough play.
100%.
They're sitting at desks when they're not supposed to be sitting at desks yet. They're learning letters now in Grade R and reading, which originally they weren't supposed to. It was only supposed to get used to the different media.
From Grade One, right?
So now, and it's had a knock-on effect on the preschools, because now, okay, so now we're all in Grade R, so now actually you need to put your children in preschool before Grade R, and then it became, oh, but playgroup, and oh, are you in a baby group? And the expectation is becoming higher and higher, and the pressure on the children are becoming more and more, and how many extra meals is your child doing, and. So in my opinion, that's why I think playgroup needs to stay playgroup, and nursery schools shouldn't be doing the 2 to 3 year olds. Because they really need that environment to just play. And it's not necessarily nursery schools. It's around, you know, it's the parents want it, so they put pressure on the teachers, and it's just like a vicious circle. So you find in a lot of nursery schools, the children are doing worksheets, and the parents think it's amazing. Circle the same one. Which one is different? Because they can see that they learned something. But actually, the child didn't learn much more sitting in the sand, so grabbing a spade from the child next to him. And that's also why I like to have a playgroup, so no one can put that pressure on me at a nursery school. The principal can't come and say, so I had this problem when I was teaching at the school that I had to do it the way the principal told me to do it. And then when you as a parent come to me and say, oh, you know, I don't like this, what does this mean? And I don't believe in it. How do I
defend
it? So then when I open my own playgroup, I have to do it the way I wanted to, what I believe in. So now, if you have a problem, I'm like, okay, this is what I do, and I'm not going to change. And, you know, I won't put it that bluntly. If you don't like it, go somewhere else.
Have you thought about the pipeline of the children who are exiting your playgroup? But beyond the nursery school that they go to thereafter, but the primary school and the secondary school, because speaking about the pressures on children, I think that that's a huge, huge thing. And I look at, I have a brother who's 19 years younger than me, and I look at the things that he's doing in the same high school that I went to versus the things that I did. And this high school is in many ways still politically progressive. It's still a very cultural, alive space. There's a lot of things that are the same, but there are things that have changed so dramatically, and the levels of homework, the expectations, the you need to have your shit figured out much earlier. I really struggle with that, because I wonder what that will look like for my child and my children actually going into the world. So I think that what I as Dee knows, I'm quite pragmatic in the sense where I want to handle my child with the level of kid gloves that is required, because I remember I grew up in a very safe space. I was in a very diverse space, and had a lot of things that were really stimulated my imagination and my element of play from a foundation age. That said, the world is quite different now. How do I prepare my child and my newborn for a world that is different? So the kids that are leaving your space and going into the next, what is ideal for you? What does that look like?
So I'm very much aware of where they go, and I feel like they need to be prepared. So the first year when they come to me and they're two, they're little babies, and there's a lot of nurturing and a lot of freedom and flexibility. Meaning if we're sitting doing morning ring and tousing in the sandpit, and he's two and he's going to come in, as long as there's another person who can be outside with him and will encourage him, and he'll naturally come eventually when he sees everybody else, because that's what children do. They want to be like their friends. But he still has that flexibility. Then the second year that they're here, where they turn three, they get more responsibilities, and now it's Atari, can you help? So and so wash her hands, can you show her where to put her apron? Mm-hmm. And then especially in the last term, you know, I know that they're moving on and we talk about going and what that means, and I know the milestones that they have to reach and what they're going to expect of them. Mm-hmm. Like putting their own lunch boxes away, what putting up their own sleeves to wash their hands, dressing themselves, you know, a lot of coming to you to say there is a problem, which is why I prefer them to be in a small space, because I hear everything they say and I can intervene and I can lead the conversation, lead the play, so that by the time they leave here, they're not going to stand in the corner and cry when something happens on the playground. They have the coping skills to come and tell the teacher or tell you what happened. They have the language, which is why I think they need to be separate from all the kids. And then there's also, so because I'm a preschool teacher, I run a preschool program, even though they're playgroup age. So I do exactly the program that we do in a preschool. So that would be free play when they arrived, morning ring, we do art, free play, we do music and movement, then we do free play, then we do clean up, tidy up, then we do story. So that's exactly what you're going to find at Green Park, at the parks. That is your, at Westcliff where you are, that is your program. And there's a reason it's like that. But then what I've added, obviously, is my own other things in between. And then you wouldn't get the flexibility in a preschool than you would in playgroup, and. The other thing is that what you were asking about, and I often think about this with my own child who's now just turned six, is we need to, they're going to live in a different world from us. The oceans are going to be covered in plastic. There's, you know, the global warming, there's that, it's just, there's so many things that they are going to have to need to think out of the box for. Jobs that we can't even think of yet. Really a completely different world. For me, it's almost better to prepare them. The emotional and social is so much more important. To learn, to work in a group, to be the leader, to follow, cooperation. Mm. You know, all that kind of stuff is so important. And how do you develop that? You know, not having a strict program where you have to listen to what the teacher says, and we're all sitting here and we're all making a tortoise, and this is what you're doing now, and you want to make mummy, no, you're not making mummy, and no, the tortoise does not have six legs. So what is your child learning? You know? Well, so you want your child to be in a school where your child goes, I don't want to make a tortoise. I want to make a robot that turns into a tortoise and then grows into
mommy.
Monster truck mommy. You know, and what do we need for that? Okay, let's think about it. Okay, do we need toilet rolls? Do we need, let's go in the garden. You know, like, I mean, you can imagine what that child is learning. Instead of sitting there being told no, now your child brings the beautiful tortoise home that also you're impressed with. Because it looks like a tortoise. You put it on your fridge. You affirm that the teacher's work is better. That her idea was better. Your family comes over. Oh, what a beautiful tortoise. Opposed to the scratch. The little... they've taken the black crayon because that was the closest. And then they like... you know, but...
No, it's fascinating. And actually, these days, when Tao's come home with his art, I ask him, what is this? And he has a wonderful idea about, it's a monster truck, and then my monster truck did this, and then it became a transformer. And then, you know, so it's, I enjoy it. But I also have no other point of reference, right? I will say, though, that's going to check out some of the nursery schools in the area. I am learning that there's definitely a formula, as you're saying, Oka, there's a formula that works, or quote-unquote works. And what I find really interesting watching this take place now is that I see these kids then enter varsity. I see them enter varsity.
That's interesting,
Yeah, that must be fascinating.
It isn't, because they're not cute anymore. They are very confused and they don't know how to think.
And they want a prize for participating.
They want prizes for everything. You know, and also there's a lot of emotional immaturity and inability to really work through things. So there is this constant. Mm. The context is that they're all flailing all the time. They don't know how to hold space even for themselves, many of them. And I'm not exaggerating here.
Sure.
You know, it's so interesting because Uke and I had this conversation this morning about terminology. Because I posted something on Instagram yesterday about creches and I don't know what I said, creche, play school, nursery school. So I just kind of intermixed all these different terms about a place that looks after young children.
Sure.
With my own understanding of that, which is probably not so much similar to yours because you have a more
deeper,
formal education around that, yeah. I mean, I think for the most part what that means to us both, and you can, you know, correct me if you think I'm wrong, Kath, is a space that is stimulating and interesting and where the kids can play and grow and learn,
and
both emotionally and they're safe. Uke said to me this morning, my terminology was all wrong. So I went home and I was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting.
Be like judgy, though.
No, but
informative.
But it's
hugely helpful.
No, but seriously, it's hugely helpful because I genuinely didn't realize that. What that actually brought up for me, I realized, was that I was raised very differently to the way that Tao is being raised.
Mm.
So for my parents, I mean, around the time that I was in creche, we were staying in like, not like poor neighborhoods, but I mean, my dad was a minister in a relatively poor neighborhood. We were like, what, lower middle class, and like stuff around Model C schools only came up a little bit after. And then I remember, you know, I just went to any old creche. So what I'm realizing is that there are all these things that we think long and hard about us as this generation.
Yeah.
But my parents, they certainly didn't.
Yeah.
And I realized that for me, the terminology, that's where it begins and ends, is that my understanding of it's actually quite different, but the terminology remains the same.
Mm.
So I wondered for how many of us, certainly for our generation, who come from a kind of aspirationally middle-class background, and many of us do, you know, how that stuff plays out.
And where the best school was probably the closest school.
The best school was the closest school, but also Model C schools were a huge, huge deal. And Model C schools came with their own things.
For breakfast?
You know, am I going to put Tao's name down for somewhere? And I kind of, you know, I was kind of completely frantic thinking, I don't even know where to start. I'm wondering if maybe you can just give our listeners a kind of some tips, I suppose, to think about, I guess, perhaps a little bit about that.
Yeah, it is very daunting. So what I always say is keep your options open, because you don't know what your kid's going to be like. So you put your name down when your child is small, and then closer to the time, you go and you check it out again, because teachers change. Principles change. Your child might be best friends with little Sophie, and little Sophie is going to the school, and now your child is shattered, and your child is actually quite shy and can't cope on his own, and now you don't have that option because you didn't put your name down.
Sure.
So put your name down at a few places. You might have a sporty child, you might have a quirky child. Keep your options open.
Can you put your name down for a government school?
No.
So you can only put your name down the year before. You go into grade one.
And is that I saw this thing on the news, and sorry, I do sound quite ignorant and a bit silly now, but for others who might also be in my position, if you want your kid to go to a government school, is that part of that kind of national day where you have to register online? And that happens in a specific way at a specific time? Okay.
Yes. And at private schools, often parents put their names down when they're pregnant.
No, you can't put your name down if you're pregnant anymore.
Ah.
You have to put your name down when you have a birth certificate. Because it was that ridiculous. Because people were putting their names on when they're pregnant and then miscarrying. Or they were giving birth to stillborns or whatever the case is. And then obviously not following up because of the grief. I mean, or the mourning process, not following up with the school to say that this person is no longer.
Mm.
And then the schools were having to like deal with essentially these open places, not that they couldn't fill them. But so when I went back to start that kind of pedantic looking at various different schools, they were saying, we need a birth certificate. And I was like, duh, of course we need a birth certificate because the person has to be alive. And they were saying, no, the people were coming there at 3 months pregnant.
Seriously, it's a thing. Wow. It was a thing.
Actually, seeing that we're on the topic of private schools, I am increasingly increasingly more kind of taken by the politics of private schools. Who gets in, who doesn't get in, and certainly in Johannesburg, I think it is definitely more racially mixed.
Sure.
Class-wise, obviously we're speaking about a very similar kind of class of child who is attending that school. In Cape Town, of course, private schools, you know, as spaces, not very diverse at all. And so I'm wondering, Uka, from your perspective, in terms of small tots who, I'm going to say this, but we had this, both Uka and I attended a talk about race and how children, small children, see race from an early age at Uka's playgroup about 2 weeks ago. But I'm very intrigued by when they start seeing race and how that manifests for them, not in contrived ways, and there's nothing nasty about what they're seeing. They see, they perceive of difference, as we all do. Or sameness, exactly. Yes, better way of phrasing that. And I guess I want to know from you, how important do you think that is? Do you think it is important for children to be, for small children in particular? Because I do think perhaps parents think about this later when kids are in high school and they're going, exactly.
Which by then it's almost too late.
Exactly.
So for me, it's one of my top things because of personal experience. Yeah, because I've been in this space for a really long time, and I guess I see things that parents don't always see. Little children make sense of their world by seeing patterns. For instance, at the moment, it's all about, in my class at the moment, it's all about who's a boy, who's a girl, who's big, who's small. And children of color see race much sooner. So white parents are often surprised when I think it's an issue, and I feel almost it's their responsibility to be more hectic with their white kids and use that privilege and power in a good way and make sure that their white children are in diverse spaces and schools. And that's a topic for
another day.
So they see patterns.
Yeah.
So for me, it's very important that they represented in the play group, different children are represented. So there needs to be, you have to have diversity in your books, on your walls, on your family photographs. So it's not really going to work if I have like 7 white children and like 1 little black child, because how is that child going to feel? And if all the parents are white and my parents are not, I get really irritated when teachers don't realize how important, and parents don't realize how important diversity is in schools. A lot of teachers have the attitude that I don't see color, why does it matter? Blue, green, yellow.
It does matter.
Children see color. 100%. We have to talk about it. We have to be okay about it. And if I don't feel comfortable talking about it, how's this little child going to navigate
that space?
So we talk about it a lot at Play Group in an age-appropriate way. We point out sameness and we point out difference. So we'll say, Tali, you have curly hair. And so you have black hair, and you have short hair, and you have red hair, and we all have different hair, but we all have the same because we all have to wash our hair. I have brown skin, and you have black skin, and you have creamy color skin, and you have toffee color skin. We all have different skin, but we all have to put sun cream on us. You have blonde hair, and you have blonde hair, and you have blonde hair, and you have blue eyes, and you have blue eyes, then that's the norm. And if all the books illustrate that,
yes, of course.
And then that's the norm and the ideal, which is why it's so hard for black children to navigate things, because the princess is blonde and this princess is blonde, and in this book the hero is a white male, and I buy my black daughter tattoos and it doesn't show up in the skin because nobody's ever thought of that, or magnets for the fridge that shows which little task she's done, and I have to really search to find children with brown faces. Every little thing has been designed for white people. Emojis have only changed color
in the last year or 2 years or whatever.
Which is now why I always send a black thumbs up because I feel like you have to live in my daughter's world where everything is white. I will make sure
she sees
my white friends will all get black emojis see what the world is really like for her.
I grew up in, my mother is white, my father is colored, and then my stepfather is Indian. So we lived in Lens, and it was interesting because obviously we were a diverse group and they couldn't actually get married. In South Africa, they had to get married in Zimbabwe.
Did they?
Yeah.
No
they
way.
They were morality, they couldn't get married. So they married in Harare. And then they came back and then we lived in Lens and we would take a Patco bus to Fordsburg. And I was in a school in Bellevue, just outside of Yeovil, a nursery school, and I got teased relentlessly about my hair. So my hair was curly at the time and I would get teased by these white kids about my hair. And I was unhappy in that school for maybe a month. My mother thought, fuck this, I'm actually moving my child.
Mm.
So she moved me then to a school called Jiswa, and Jiswa stands for something that's much longer and much more inclusive, and I can't remember the name right now. Mm. But Jiswa was in Fordsburg, and we celebrated every single religious holiday. There were kids of all the races there, predominantly Indian children because it was in Fordsburg, but there were kids, there were black kids, colored kids, white kids.
Was it the 90s? Early 90s.
It was the 80s, and I think what was interesting about Jiswa is Jiswa was very much like an NGO stalwart kind of space to send your kids, like Mimosa, right? So you send your kids there because you think that it's politically kind of inclusive and all the rest, and for a large part it was.
Yeah.
But I think that like race one is definitely important. Mm-hmm. Representation is hugely important.
Absolutely.
And Dee, you and I and our friends have that conversation where we go to bookstores and we're like, we're searching for books that have black kids, brown kids, Indian kids, different religious kind of narratives, if we want a religious narrative, whatever that may look like. And it's been fascinating for me that, like, with the new dispensation and, like, us being quote-unquote born trees, we're not quite, but born trees, there's kind of an expectation that now everything's cool, everything's all right, and it's not.
Mm.
You know, so we're still raising our children in a predominantly white space.
Yeah.
And
because
asking
of class.
Definitely because of class, but also what's interesting for me is having conversations with, speaking back to the school narrative, having conversations with various different people at dinner tables around where they're sending their children.
Mm.
And know for a lot of our friends, and this is a drag, granted it is a drag, they're thinking of sending the kids to the ridge.
Oh.
And what I mean by drag is dragging them across the coals, if you like, about it. But I think that it's fascinating for me because I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what is this about? And having grown up in a fairly inclusive space, these are people who went to Sacred Heart who are politically, like, very acutely aware, astute, and all the rest. And they'll say stuff like, no, but it will never change unless we change it. And I keep saying, I hear you on all fronts, but is the guinea pig is going to be your kid?
Mm.
Your kid is going to be at the coalface around changing what that looks like.
And I have a friend who has that theory. He and I know someone who has that, who wants to go to a more conservative school where her child will not be in the majority or even...
Not even vaguely,
halfway. But she's willing to have that fight and she wants to make a change. And
I'm fascinating
for it. Like, if that's what you can do, I am not able to do that personally.
But you can do that as a parent, right? And granted, I know people will come at me, and that's fine, but you can do that as a parent. What are you putting your child through in doing that? So my thing is, don't talk to me about transformation is very high on our agenda and I can't wait, we're thinking about transforming our schools, you know what I mean? Like, great, I'm pleased that you
committee
for fuck's sakes, I don't give a shit, like, what are your numbers? And I remember going to St. John's and having a conversation around that was the first. So everything else, the principal was speaking in such articulate, easy ways. He was engaging Joey and I.
Right.
Yes, speak about them. What are your demographics? What are your demographics? Twitch. I was like, fuck you. I can't do this with you. I'm not interested in my son being a guinea pig. I'm not interested in my son being stereotyped in a specific fashion. Like, I wasn't stereotyped him, like, for a range of reasons, but I wasn't stereotyped. Why would I want to put my kid through that? It makes no sense.
I'm sick. Hello, Tommy. I'm sick. You do it, Tommy.
Almost got hiccups. What is
Almost
got hiccups.
Where?
Oh. Sorry, Ammo.
We're speaking to Uka about teenagers, which is
completely lost in conversation.
We haven't yet lost. We have not gotten there yet. Uka, how
confession.
Do you spend...
Confession.
Oh, go.
I'm going to kill my child. So please help me. And a good friend of mine sent me a podcast, which I haven't listened to because I have a 6 week old and I'm flailing at life at the moment. But around this woman who runs a little institute, I forget her name, and maybe I should have that at some point, but I forget her name. She runs an institute in the States around toddlers and it's an entire research institute. And she's got now, she was then on this these two other women's podcast. I forget the name. Sorry, listeners, I'll put it out onto social media or whatever. So she has this podcast running, and it was super interesting for me because she was saying that toddlers are in a particular kind of phase in their lives where they understand the world in a very particular way. And I have to admit, I am frightened of my child all the time. And now, and we were speaking about this in the driveway, but like having the perspective of a newborn, I flailed at newborn life as well, because newborns for me were just like, oh, this is a lot. Like, what do you mean I have to feed them every 2 to 3 hours? What do you mean I have to do, like, wake up every 2 to 3 hours, whatever the issue was. Now having a newborn, I'm like, oh, he is cuddly. He is uncomplicated. He is wonderful.
He doesn't talk,
yay,
which is one where you left him.
He stays where you left him, which is all the things that a good girlfriend of ours used to say to us about newborns and how, why she loved them, and I never understood.
Now
I get it, but it's because my 3-year-old is literally rocking our entire household.
Yeah.
So maybe if you could just speak a little bit, because this is a space that you feel so comfortable.
There is no magic line that I can give you.
Okay, so I think that my question is, what do you do when you're living in a house where it's either incredibly put together, well managed, he's articulate, he's in a good space, we're all cool, to very next moment he is throwing his shit out of the fucking park and the rest of us are all like, what the fuck happened? And we don't know how we got here. So how do you manage that? What do you do?
Well, how I survive, is just seeing the humor in it. I don't know if that's how I survive.
This is why I keep saying the humor.
You do. Because, and then the
can you laugh at them / with them?
Well, I do.
Question.
And it just kind of sometimes just like dissolves.
Some of it does.
Because I started to do it with a gunny and it does start to dissolve the situation. Yeah.
Sometimes I do get very, very angry.
Yes.
Well, my own child does. Get very, very angry when I laugh at her. But
she's 6 now.
But the kids at school, like sometimes you actually just have to have a sense of humor about it. That's how I feel.
But can I say, I think that some things for me triggers me. And this is the first time that I'm in a position around parenting where I feel intellectually and emotionally triggered. And I've never encountered that. And I'm sure that this is not just for teenagers. This is, okay, teenagers, you know, it'll come up repeatedly during the course of the time with them. But he triggers a fundamental part of me where I literally see red. And I have to remove myself from the situation and remove him from me and then come back and circle back to be a parent that is responsible.
I hear that. So are you asking for like little practical
tips? Yes, 100%.
What you're saying.
Thank you for tapping in and filtering. What are you actually asking for? I feel like I'm now living out the toddlerdom.
Yeah, so one of my tiny little practical tips is to just like murmur under my breath,
can you do that?
And then I feel better. So if my daughter in the bath, walk to the kitchen, go,
what the fuck?
Or put her in the car, walk around to my side, and go, oh, then it feels better. That's one.
Thank you. Okay, that's a
very, very good one.
That is useful.
No, but seriously though, it's good to have like a few rules. Not many rules. Just a few rules. And we all need to know what the rules are, and you can, and I've often given parents this advice, and you even write it down. You sit down with your child and you say, let's talk about rules. What are rules? And because they're in preschool, they already know what the rules are.
Okay.
And if they don't, so I do this with the children in play group as well, say, I think we need some rules. What rules should we have? And then they look at you and then you go, am I allowed to kick you?
No.
I go, yeah, so that could be a rule. No kicking.
Oh my God.
And then I'll go, what else? And then, of course, I've gotten the ball rolling.
Yeah.
So now everybody's got a rule. But you only have 2 minutes. So you decide.
What are we talking?
You and your partner.
three.
I would say, let's do four. I would say four.
Okay.
So I would say between you and your partner, whoever you live with, you decide first where you want this conversation to go and what you can live with. Maybe I don't mind my children jumping on the bed, jumping on the couch. I don't mind stuff like that. So you decide what's important to you. But once you've decided on your rules, these are your rules.
Mm.
You cannot break them when you're tired. You cannot break them when you're sick. These are your rules, what's really important. So my rules are, in a playgroup, we have a few rules. You say please and thank you.
Okay.
Non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. That's one of our rules. Mm-hmm. You don't hurt anybody, including yourself, which later, you know, when they get older, that you expand on that. Yeah, so if you're, I mean, your rule could be as simple as picking up the towels. So also what's nice about that is, because you're going to have these rules, before you go into a shop, you already, you talk about your rules. These are the rules. So we have rules like, we don't have treats in the week, we drink water in the week. Well, we've got a few extra rules now because my children are older. Let me think, for 2-3 year olds, what else do we have at school? We're not allowed to take any small toys outside, like puzzles and Lego, scissors,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. We don't have many rules. We clean up, tidy up when it's time to clean up, tidy up. Mm-hmm. And
what are the consequences? Because this is where it gets tricky.
Okay. Yeah. So again, so a school environment is very different from a home environment. So now I have to manage 10 little children.
Yeah.
If one does something wrong, all 10 pairs of eyes are on me. I cannot let it go because there will be anarchy.
Of course.
So there's always a warning. So first of all, your tone of voice needs to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So studies and research show that children respond better to a deeper staccato voice, which often is also why they listen more to men, because their voices are naturally deeper.
I was telling you this. See, don't even act about it. I said to you, he listens to Joey more than he listens to me.
Going down to their level, so there's like eye contact, not looking down on them.
Okay.
So that's why you'll always see me talking to them. I go on my knees, on my hunches.
Yeah.
So let's say let's use Tao as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Tao's in the sandpit and he's throwing sand. I don't go, oh, Tao-y, that's not nice, boy. You know, that's not realistic. If I drive into your car, you don't get out your car and go, aww, nice. You know, like that's just not how the world works.
Yeah.
And I promise you, the teacher at your school is not going to speak to your child like that. And then I have children in my class who get a big shock because it's not fair to your child.
Yeah.
So say, no, Tao, that is not nice. We don't show sand.
Yeah.
It's going to go in your friend's eyes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And it's going to be sore. So there are a lot of disciplinarians who believe you shouldn't give them a reason.
But sure, you should give them a reason.
I feel they should. Feel they're clever little people. Mm. They need a reason.
Mm.
So I give them a reason. I don't shout. I just talk in a deep, firm voice.
Yeah.
And everybody stops and looks at me. So now Tao does it the second time. Now there's a warning.
What's the warning?
Tao, if you don't stop throwing sand, I'm taking you out of the sandpit. Third time Tao does it, everyone is watching.
You have to take him out.
I put him out of the sandpit. I say, no, you don't get to play. He has a shit fit. I ignore it completely.
Okay. Yeah.
And I wait. He's three. I wait for 3 minutes. I say, are you ready to play in the sandpit again? The same with, he's playing in the Wendy house and he's hitting everyone in the Wendy house. Mm. If you can't play nicely with your friends, or if you're grabbing and not sharing, then you have to come out of the Wendy house. And I promise you, all the other 10 little children watch me, and none of them will even try it again because they saw
what she's happened. I follow through. Yeah.
So follow through is a big thing.
You can't stay, you can't jump on the couch. But now I'm really tired. And
so it's interesting because Joey keeps saying, I feel like we're in sync, because I was raised like this, right? So you discipline and you give them a reason as to why X is problematic, and then you follow through. My mother is big about follow through. She does not fuck around. So I similarly have kind of emulated that parenting style with Akani, and I think that my husband feels like, so he was raised in an environment where kids must just listen. They must just fucking listen. Like, why do I need to explain everything? And also he feels like we're incentivizing. So I'll say stuff like, if you don't do that, then you're not going to go to play with Tao.
Yes.
Because naughty boys need to stay at home and not play with Tao because you're clearly showing me that you're unable to play nicely. Whatever that looks like, right? Yeah. And he will say, why are we incentivizing perpetually? So now he's learning reward and like do something for a reward.
Yeah, so also what you're saying there I find problematic.
Okay.
Like the naughty part.
Okay.
Because you are calling him naughty.
Okay.
Not what he is doing is naughty.
Okay.
And he's too small to know
the difference. Okay.
So we try to steer away from you are naughty.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
So you are being, no, you don't even say
what
that.
You are doing. Well, so I, in a school environment, will never use the naughty word.
Okay.
Number one, just because they can't tell the difference. And if I say, D, don't play with that cup because you're being naughty.
Mm.
And then later on, D, don't throw sand in the sand. But eventually they're going to hear D, naughty, D, naughty. Oh, it was yeah. D. D's naughty. D's not at school today. But who did it? D did it.
Okay.
So I say you need to listen, switch on your listening ears, you're not listening, or you are not, I try and word what they're doing, we're not baking toys, we're not kicking the blocks, that's not what blocks are for, we build with blocks, you know, whatever, I mean, if you give an example of what he did, so I try and word a difference. We're not going to go to Tao today, because I asked you not to splash in the bath and wet the whole bathroom, if that's one of your things or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just like what you're wording around it.
That's really interesting.
It is.
Because also, if they keep hearing, they're also going to stop hearing you after a while. If you keep like, no, 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 that's naughty, no, that's wrong, no, no, like, you know.
I'll say that that's naughty behavior, but I also feel like maybe my pitch is not to, I'm not trying to undermine them, but it's exactly what you're saying. Kids of that age see things in such a specific light, like it's so stark, right? And I sometimes do think that I miss that kind of, and I'm expecting a nuance that doesn't exist.
Morning,
Tao.
How is Tao asleep?
That space where he's like, on one day he'll be like, I'm not a naughty boy, mommy, I'm a good boy. I'm out of nowhere, and I'm very acutely aware that shit, actually, maybe I've set some of this dynamic up.
So, you're always a good boy.
Yes, but sometimes you behave naughtily. Do they understand that, though?
So, you're always a good boy, but sometimes you don't listen, and you do things that you're not supposed to. Like, hitting your brother in the face.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
Mommy doesn't hit daddy.
Yeah.
Daddy doesn't hit mommy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Keep it simple on their level.
Yeah. I think that's so, so helpful.
Yeah. And also to like bring it back to other people in the household.
Yeah.
So, which I actually think is kind of, that's really wonderful to hear actually for me, because I'd never thought about that. Mommy doesn't hit daddy. Daddy doesn't hit mommy.
And so he understands that. Back to like a sense of belonging, right? So like, like your tribe, your clan, what they do and what they don't do.
I'll say to them at playgroup, do I grab from Carlos? No. Does Carlos push me? No, we don't do that.
And they
look at you like, with big eyes. Like they, you can actually see them thinking, they've never seen us push each other. And I say, do I shout at you? No, so you can shout at me. But then you got to make sure you don't shout at them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean with whatever you say and whatever rules you have, you and your partner need to stick to it. So you need to sit down beforehand and decide what you're willing to let go. And of course, I definitely let the small battles go. So like I said to parents, if you've got to bring your child to school in their pajamas, bring them to school in their pajamas, so what? Pack the clothes in the bag. The minute you leave, I go, and I've done that so many times.
Mm.
I go, Tommy, go get your clothes, let's dress. I don't know, go camp in her pajamas for a year. Because I said to her parents, just leave. If you have to bring the toothbrush or the porridge, send it to school. Teachers are used to it, really. We don't care.
Yeah, that's true.
In the jacket, why fight about every little thing?
Mm. So interesting, though, Oka, because I think like this actually swings back around to our much earlier conversation, which is around the space for kids to play. And exactly, because this is the kind of shit they pull at this age, right? And so you have to be like, cool, this this is how it is, and yeah. treat it with a level of lightness, right?
Yes.
And so
just run with it.
But yeah, the thing is, I think also is that, and I've been thinking about this a lot, is that every moment as a new parent and yes. as a parent to a young child feels like this moment is going to last forever.
It does.
And there's a sense of gravitas that you approach each moment with as a parent, yeah. right? And especially your first kid, where you're like, if I don't get him changed in the morning, to use your example, if I don't get him changed in the morning and ready for the world, then he's going to be 18 or 24, and he's going to be wanting to go to work in his fucking pajamas, and I'm not that bitch. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not true. But I look at it now, and I'm like, shit, like, every moment, I put such gravity on each moment that I'm like, yes. I inflate it to a point where I'm like, it's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to remember that when you're...
In the moment.
Yeah.
It is hard. So you know what also works for me, and I have a very strong daughter. Mm-hmm. Very headstrong.
She's so strong.
Yeah.
So... she's Beyonce, basically.
Good. We need one. We need one.
So what I did with her from a really young age was I would act when she gets and has that shit fit and she's going mad about her clothes and everything is wrong, I pick her up and I hug her really tight and I say, Mommy loves you so much. I could see that you're really angry right now, and it would just dissolve and I would feel better and snap out of that, I'm going to kill her, and she would feel better. Whereas when I continuously fight it, and you almost become childish sometimes where you want to go, well, fine then, put on whatever you want, and storm off. But that's, you know, it's really out of experience. It doesn't help.
No,
so
totally.
I often find with such a strong child that really helps. Just hugging her. Was hugging it out, and I can feel her going limp in my arms, and all the fight is gone, and I can feel myself
settling a bit also.
Actually, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know? So that I also find helpful. Makes a big difference.
And how, I mean, this makes a lot of sense to me. So just last night, and I think he's dropping a nap, so we have a situation where if he naps for even just a little bit too long, the
night.
It's just a lot. And so he took forever to go down, and he kept calling and calling. He said, something's keeping me awake. And I said, no, I don't think so. And initially I was quite patient, and then by like the fifth time I was like, this is enough! You know you need to sleep! And then... And then I went back to my room, and exactly as you're saying, I was just like, oh man, this helps nothing. Like, this kid never responds to this shit. I can imagine that some kids do, and I actually know little children who do, because I know their parents, and it's just how it's been set up in their house. But Tao, no, he's like, you can actually go fuck yourself. I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I need another cuddle. I need a pat. Like, he'll say, pat me more. I mean, I actually want to laugh at him. But anyway, the point is, I think, going, Tula, Tula, for the 10th time. That song is killing me. When I eventually calm down, when I calm down, and I go back in, and I sing Tula in a nice voice, because you're singing a drum, Mama.
Best life. This is 101 self care. Like, I need self-care. You to pat me more. Pat me more, Mama. Sing in that nice voice. Don't sing in that shit voice. What are you doing?
If you knew the word shit, me like this is shit. Treat me badly.
It's an opportunity, Dee. It's an opportunity.
I know, so I hear that. Like, be gentle, be kind. This child takes no drama. He's like, you are being unkind. Stop it. Which touches me on my studio, because I was a firstborn and I had a sibling 3.5 years later.
But I don't know.
I had to get on with it.
I don't even know if it's that, or if it's also that some of the parenting stuff is unkind on you.
Totally.
You're saying I'm being unkind on you, but you're also being unkind on me. I don't want to sing the wheels on the bus for the 100th time tonight.
But in that moment, you understand that, and he doesn't.
And you just pull towards yourself.
Exactly. And so what can I do? Last night, I mean, I had to get up. I was reading my book, and eventually I was just like, oh, fuck it. I'm never going to get past this page. So I just lay there going, I'll just wait. Mama! I completely hear you, okay? Be kind. Hug it out. I totally hear that.
Be kind. And be humorous.
Be kind, be humorous.
Yeah.
And you know, another practical tip that's amazing is that you print out, because in the moment, you're so angry sometimes that you just can't remember what, you know what the right thing is to say.
Mm.
When you read the articles about this, you're like, oh, that makes so much sense. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
Print it out and stick it on your mirror or...
wherever you'll see it.
Wherever you'll see it, on your fridge or wherever you are the most.
Mm.
So that you actually remember these little lines because it makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
So yesterday, so as I said, okay, we took our six-week-old for... I took my six-week-old for immunizations. And I've got a three-year-old as well. And he woke up in the middle of the night and I've been up all night with the six-week-old because he was struggling with the immunizations. So I'm busy kind of like ubbering and like rocking this kid perpetually to try and get him to sleep. And the three-year-old, Akane wakes up and he's calling for me and I can't go to him, so I wake the dad to go and see what's up.
Yeah.
And as I wake him, no, but it's interesting for me because I've noticed that now being at home for close on 2 months now, I have more space and more capacity in some ways that I didn't have before where I was at a job or whatever. And I'm also seeing him, my three-year-old, in a more intimate way for a sustained period of time that I had because I was working full-time. My job isn't flexible necessarily. Like, I can work from home, but really most of the time because of meetings, I'm at work. So it's been fascinating for me that I've realized that Akane needs boundaries, as all kids do. He does need a firm voice to get things done, but he also needs kindness and humor, exactly what you're talking about. And I woke Joey to say, can you please go and check what he needs? But he's been waking up. He's regressed naturally with the newborn. I woke Joey up to go and check what he needed, and I was saying to him, as he left the room, I said, but be nice. And it's interesting for me because that was never something that I thought I would say. Not that we're not nice or we're not kind, but at 3 o'clock in the morning, you are a very different person. And I remember walking out of the room and said to Akane, I can't do this with you. Like, you've got your bottle, you've got your teddy, you're in a warm bed. Go to sleep. Go to sleep. You know that Samuel L. Jackson one, like, go the fuck to sleep? Have you seen
this? Yes, yes.
You know, I'm feeling very much along that vein.
Yes.
And I've realized actually exactly what you're saying, that children respond regardless of, like, their temperament.
Yes.
Because Akane and Tao are quite different children, but regardless of their temperament, to that level of, like, humor and kindness. So two nights before he had woken up, wanted a bottle, and I refused to give him a bottle because I'm not rewarding waking up in the middle of the night. I hate to say it. I want him to go back to sleep, but I went up and I sat down on one of these chairs that I'm sitting on now, sat down next to his cot, and we had a conversation. And I was just like, I'm not going to give you a bottle because you're going to wake up and you're going to have weed through your nappy and you'll be wet and you'll be cold because it's winter. And I'm not giving you a bottle because you're going to expect a bottle every night when you wake up. But I am going to sit here with you and we can have we can just chat and we can talk and we can until you're ready to go to sleep. It was a completely, it took longer. It took probably, I think 15 minutes, not even that long, 15 minutes versus a screaming match of a poor kid who's just like, what the fuck? I just want another fucking bottle. Get me a bottle.
Yeah.
So it's just been really interesting
and
for me.
And imagine being that little child. You can't do anything on your own. Imagine that us as grown-ups get up in the middle of the night, you want some water, you go get some water. Now I've got to depend on this person
to go and
give me water or to take me to the toilet or to everything in your life. You have to get permission or you have to cry or you have to find a way that
provoke a response.
Get this grown-up to meet your need. And that's quite... I mean, can you imagine that? You know, and that's also why don't have too many rules. They also need some control. So, like, here are two outfits. Which one do you want to wear today?
It's a good idea.
Do you want porridge? I'm not saying a million choices. Do you want porridge or toast? You know, like, give them some choices
some
and some control.
Because
they can't control anything in their little lives. You decide when they go to sleep. You decide when they eat. And this is the age where they realize they're not you. They are their own little person, and they want to start fighting for their own little life.
Yes.
So you've got to let them have some.
Yes.
I think it's fascinating. Yeah. I think exactly what you're saying, like this is when they're starting to break free and become independent and autonomous, and it feels like an assault, but actually it is an opportunity.
And it's natural. Yeah. There would be something wrong if they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
There would be something very wrong.
Yeah.
So shame. Maybe we should stop calling them teenagers and just call them three again, because maybe we love them.
We do love them, but... We do love them. We love them dearly. But I think, yeah, it is a very specific age, and I think that...
Willful souls.
Willful souls, and in a very pressured society, where you're really struggling just on a day to day, and then now to come home and have to, like, fight against, you know.
And just be respectful.
Mm.
Be respectful. That's my very big thing with little children, is to be respectful and to apologize when you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
You say sorry.
Yeah.
Mm. Mommy was shouting that was wrong.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Like, mommy had a hard day at work. Mm. I'm really sorry that it's
unacceptable.
Made you sad.
Yeah.
I shouldn't shout at you.
Mm. Okay. This has been very good and very useful for us, Dee.
Super helpful, yeah.
We're going to have to remember all these things and, like, WhatsApp each other around bedtime and be like, were you respectful? Did you provide agency? Were you kind, and did you find the humor?
But I do think maybe at some level it makes it easier for us also, because we're able to see them as little people figuring out, you know.
Once you see the results, you'll also do more of it. Because it's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Just say one nap.
What do you mean?
One nap.
You want to have one nap?
Yes.
So you're tired today?
Yes.
But you haven't been sleeping well. You haven't wanted to nap, so why are you tired today?
Okay, I think exactly as Kath has said, there's so much support in the first 2 years. And also, I was listening to you earlier talking about the little baby group and stuff. And there's so many things that have become so commercialized around that age. Mommy and me, nanny and me, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of kind of investment in that first phase, right? Mm. And then it's almost like...
Okay, you're on your own. Bye. Yeah. Enjoy. Have fun.
Exactly like that.
And me go.
Yeah, and I won't lie, like, there's so many nights, weeknights, where I'm nervous sometimes to come home, especially when I'm really exhausted. I'm just like, oh dear, where do I find the energy now to say it's not an iPad night, or it's not... So Tao has started going, because I just totally failed at this, but I was trying to do a we don't watch iPad at night stuff, right?
During the week.
During the week. And I think we did it maybe like 2 or 3 nights. But the only way I can, like, warm his supper and get stuff ready and mine and for us to eat kind of around the same time, he'll go, can I watch? And then I'm like, okay, well, it's only, you can only watch on a special night. So now he started going,
it's a special night! Yay!
Like, I laugh to myself every night, but, like, every night's special right now. Okay, failing again. Cross. Fail me. So, but it's so tricky, because I, you know, he's also in a phase where I told you, okay, where he hits me, he smacks, and he gets very, very angry. And I do think a course would be helpful, because nobody quite knows how to tap into, you know, pause, think about it, pick your kid up, give them a hug, kind of soften some of that.
And especially hitting and stuff, you know, like, what I always say to parents is, it's not okay. It's never okay.
Yeah.
And you need to say no. If you're not going to stop, I'm going to leave the room.
Mm.
And then you remove yourself. And often they do follow you and carry on hitting you.
Of course.
But then, you know, then you're going to, I'm going to close myself in the bathroom, because I'm not going to allow you to hurt me. Because I know you love me. You know, I think it's very important to be firm around that stuff. And that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Like, we could have lunch next week and talk about the things that you can say, like, even if you have to write it down on your phone, and then you go back to it, and then you say
some kind of reference.
But this is what I also find so fascinating. So I bought a book earlier in the session before we even started recording, and was showing you this book around mindfulness for children, and you were saying, oh, it's great that they have practical tools inside them, inside this book, because I'm similar to Dee in the sense where if something is really overwhelming me, I throw myself into it and I research it ad nauseum at 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever. I'm on, like, various different articles, reading things about what can I practically do. And very often it's quite theoretical and at quite a theoretical level.
Yes.
And also, it's at a level where I do want to show Akani that it is not okay. Those things are not okay. Not that the boundaries are porous or whatever the case is. It's not okay for you to assault me or hit me, especially around bigger things, right? So like violence for me is a big thing, and certainly violence around raising a boy in South Africa is a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm saying around, like, I do think that what I struggle with as a parent is that I inflate every kind of incident, or not every incident, but specific incidents to a degree that is unnecessary. So I take it out of it just being a toddler who is going through what he's going through. And think about it around, like, I'm raising a boy, like, you know, like, what
is it? It's not always helpful, because...
And it's not always helpful.
Yeah.
And what I need is somebody to anchor me back in that moment and say, this is what's happening for this little person in this moment for you, and these are practical tools that you can kind of use to navigate that space.
So maybe try this week to just do, like, three things. So go down to their level when you talk to them.
Yeah.
I often find touch is a big thing. So you touch them, hold their hand, or touch their shoulder, go down to their level. Keep it simple. Don't preach. No, that was not nice. You do not smack your brother. And then do the hug thing. So do like those three things.
Yeah. And also, as you say, like, come up with a set of what those rules are. So know what the outcome is before you walk into that conversation. But have that participatory conversation with them where you say, what are the rules of the household? You know, and that can also evolve as is age appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. And then don't make rules that are harder to, like, the iPad.
Be consistent.
Yeah, like, it's going to be hard on you if you can't watch the iPad, because how are you going to make supper?
Yes, exactly. You know? So that's my big conundrum.
So, like, let go of the little things. Like, so watch the iPad.
Yeah.
While you make supper.
Like, see, I'm at the point where I just, whatever, it's okay. Yeah.
And it's not like he's watching violence. He's watching Peppa Pig.
Okay, this has been really helpful. So thank you so much.
I think
we're going to have to circle, and I hate to say it, I know that I think that there's just the complexity around raising children where we start off on a topic, as is always the case, and we veer off so completely from that topic, because raising children is probably one of the hardest things that we're having to do and figure out, and you want to raise human beings who are whole and happy and healthy and contribute and productive and all the rest. So, Uka, thanks so much for your time and
all of your insights.
We really, really do appreciate it. And I suspect that we will definitely be tapping into your expertise again in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time, energy.
Okay, so watch out for the next, what is it, the 6th episode.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe and review our podcast below.
Thanks, bye.
Hey, I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Dee.
And you're listening to Mamas with Attitude, otherwise known as MWA.
Mama.
Attitude. The same way I immerse myself in my career.
Yeah. You've now immersed yourself
in motherhood. I've now immersed myself in motherhood.
Mommy's a bunk. Mommy's a bunk. If mama's a bunk.
So weird. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, motherhood just comes to take on its different shapes and forms.
Mama.
No, actually, seriously, on a serious note, it's been really dope.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Mama.
Attitude.